Shalom, Rabbi Galperin.
How are you, Ilan?
I'm fine. How are you, Rabbi?
Baruch Hashem. Thank God. You know, it's such great and beautiful weather outside these days.
Oh, it's so lovely.
We can't ask for better.
No. Windy, a little windy, 25 degrees Celsius, sunny,
right.
And who could ask for more?
We might be lucky. Maybe the whole summer is going to be like this.
I don't know. I will go with that.
You never know. Look, whatever we get, we're happy with what we get. So.
Exactly. So, Parashat Shelach.
Parashat Shelach, that's right. It's a very, very eventful parasha. It's a great story. Great storyline also in regards with, in this historic portion, we see that Moses sends 12 spies to the land of Canaan to go and obviously spy it out to be able to see, how to conquer it, what to do, coming in as if they're going to take over that land. And 40 days later, they return carrying huge clusters of grapes and pomegranates and figs, and obviously to report that it's so lush and it's a beautiful land. But 10 of the spies warn that the inhabitants of the land are giants, and they're warriors, and they're more powerful, obviously, than we are, who we are as a Jewish nation. And out of
the 12,
those spies, out of the 12, only Caleb and Yehoshua, two of them, insisted that the land can be conquered as God commanded. And obviously, now, everyone's very scared. If the majority of the people are coming and saying, this is impossible to do, and two people are coming to say that it is possible, so people obviously started crying to God and to Moses saying, we'd rather return to Egypt.
Yeah, could be better.
Right. And we don't want anything. We don't have anything to do with this. And so they had a lot of issues now to deal with. And obviously God said, well, this is what the land that you guys are going to be inherit, the decree that Israel's entry into the land should be delayed now for 40 years. Why? During which time that the entire generation went out in the desert? Because to tell you, you're fighting with God. If God tells you you're going to go in there, you're going to go in there.
Yeah.
You can go and spy out tactics how to do it, but you're going to go. Not that you're
when you get the order,
starting to doubt it.
Yeah.
We see in democracies and in Jewish law, majority always rules. A best in a court of Torah law must always consist of an odd number of judges. That's why you have the high court of 71, or you have 3, or you have 9. It has to be an odd number.
Yeah, so that the decision that is made is here or there.
Correct. There's a majority.
Yeah.
Either it's yes or either it's no.
Yeah.
If you have 2 and 2, it's a tie, it's stalemate. What are you going to do?
Okay.
But the fact is that there is sometimes that the majority gets it wrong. We just have to look at this historical portion. The 12 spies came back. 10 of them came back with one report, and only 2 remained faithful to their leader, to the purpose of their mission, and to God's assurance that it was a good land. The other 10 spies went astray, really. And, the spies had one specific mission, to be going to determine and to know how best to approach the coming conquest of the land of Canaan. And instead of doing what they were sent to do, to suggest, obviously, the best way forward, 10 of the 12 spies brought back the negative report to be able to discourage the people, the Jewish people, from entering this, quote-unquote, ferocious land of people. And, he basically convinced them that we're never going to be able to do it. And, as we spoke about, the people responded accordingly, crying out to Moses, let us go back to Egypt. So what did God do? He said, hold on a second. You're fighting against me. I'm telling you something. You're fighting against me. So that generation is not going to be worthy to go into the promised land. they're going to die. And furthermore, it's very interesting to note that this day of weeping on which they cried for no good reason to God, for generations later, will be a weeping day for us, which the sages explain that this happened on the ninth day of Av, on Tisha B'Av.
Yeah.
The day that we will become a day of mourning for the destruction of our holy temple.
Yeah, Tisha B'Av.
So, the question really is, you know, why did the people not follow the two good spies, Yeshua and Kalas, instead of the others? Why did they have to go after the tenth? They were always coming back with the negative. Why did the Jews not go over the go via the two that came back with a positive outlook on it? And obviously the answer everyone's going to say is that they were outnumbered, they were outvoted, 10 versus 2 obviously, there's no contest. What's the question? Majority rules, right?
Yeah.
And I think there's something, a lesson in this itself that we can learn, that sometimes, not all the time, is the majority always the better, as you see in the story. And tragically, though they backed the losers, and the result was an extended, you know, just for the lack of better terms, let's say a vacation in the wilderness, and a tragedy for everyone of that generation. They all died out. So, even though we might be very, very democratic people and believe in the democratic process, sometimes, and clearly proven, that there will be times that the minority is right, not always the majority. And, you know, you see that there was the saintly Chafetz Chaim, very, very great, very, very great sage. And he was once challenged by a fellow Jew who was, you know, he was a very, very educated person, but he was also very, very cynical. And he challenged the Chafetz Chaim and he said, "Rabbi, doesn't the Torah itself say that you have to follow the majority of people?" So he says, "Okay, yeah." So he says this: the overwhelming majority of Jews today aren't necessarily Orthodox like you, aren't necessarily, you know, they're good Jews, traditional Jews, but they don't necessarily follow everything that you're doing. They don't necessarily follow and believe in everything that you're doing. So therefore, leave what you're doing. You're the minority, the Orthodox. You're a minority. Join everyone else. Why should you do what you're going to be the outcast? And the Chafetz Chaim, in his geniosity, I mean, he was such a genius of a person, he replied with a story, and he said like this, that recently the Chafetz Chaim had the occasion to be traveling by coach. You know, he was on a very important trip, and he was on his way home.
Okay.
And en route, the coachman distributed generous helpings of vodka to his passengers. Why? To be able to keep them warm. And the coachman, he himself, was cold and wanted to have warm, and he drank a little bit too much.
Mm-hmm.
So when they came to the crossroads, there was confusion as to which way to turn. Most people argued they're going to go to the left was the correct path. And I was one of the only sober, as the Chafetz Chaim says, of the passenger board, and I knew without a doubt that we needed to take the road to the right. So he said to this fine Jew, "Should I have followed the majority? They were hopelessly drunk. Obviously, I didn't want to follow the majority." And all too often, you know, the values and judgment calls, really, if you think about it, the calls of the world are simply wrong. No matter how outnumbered moral people may be, we'll always continue to follow the path of decency, sanity. We Jews, for example, have never ever played anything in a number of games. We've always been the smallest nation. We're not known for that we're a majority.
Yeah.
We're not known
for quality.
Exactly. We're known for our morals, for our quality, for who we really believe. You know, it drives me. I was sitting with a student today. And his professor was asking, you know, now that you finished accounting and you finished this and, you know, setting up your terms and your goals, what are you planning on doing the next couple of years? What's going to happen? What have you learned everything? How are you going to set up your life? And so this student starts to say this, and I need to look for a job, and I need to do this, and I need to do that, and so on and so forth. And he finally came over to this Jewish student, and he doesn't know why he said it, but this is what he said. He came over to the Jewish student, and he said, so what are you going to do? He says, when I'm going to serve God. And he was like, he was taken back by this answer. Because serving God is not only necessarily in service of your prayer and so on to God. It's how you act with people, how you work with people, how you find your job, how you relate in your job. All these things categorized into one thing is how you're going to service God. So I just heard it today. I thought that it was a very, very beautiful thing. Because we as Jews, we never ever play the number games. We're always the smallest nation. But our morals and so forth, that's what makes us strong. Our brain behind everything, you know, is phenomenal. So we all too often is the world that is, you know, the raving Meshuggah, the one that is always veering drunkenly out of control. And it really is up to us to be able to strengthen our character to resist and pull away from the drunken majority. And to be able to know what is right and who we're serving and what our purpose in life is.
Yeah, especially if the thing that you choose to vote for is something that you believe in.
Correct.
And that's something very Jewish, that even if there will be a lot that don't agree with you, but you know that that's the right way and that's God's way, then you will follow it, whatever they will decide or say.
Correct. So we're not, you're 100% correct. We're not voting. We're basically, we're standing on what the principle is, and we're not worrying about what everyone else might say about me or how I'm doing it. Because at the end of the day, if we do something in this way, then everyone's going to start screaming, how come you didn't do it in the other way? And if the Jewish nation does something in the other way, oh, how come you didn't do it in the other way? So we're never going to be able to please everyone. We're always going to get all this criticism anyway. So it's so important that we need to be able to be steadfast and strong on what we truly believe. And based on that, we might be the minority, but we stay strong with that. So obviously we should ask that God should inspire us with the courage to stand up and be counted with what we believe, even though we might be then put aside, you know, in the wilderness, so to speak, but we're really going to be able to stay strong, because if we don't, we will never get to our destination. And that's something that is so important, I think, that we can learn out of the lesson of the spies, that we went voting by the majority, and where did it lead us? It didn't lead us anywhere. So that's something that is so important that we can imply in our lives, in our community. If we're standing as a community as a whole, as a community together, we might be the minority. But in the outcome later on, we're just going to come out as the strongest superiority. I think that's an important lesson we can learn from this week's Torah portion.
Yes, it is. Rabbi, what about services in Shaarei Tzedek?
Yeah, we have services 7:30 and Friday evening, and Shabbat morning 9:00. Anyone, regardless of the background of affiliation, is welcome to join services which is sung, which is in, we have English and Hebrew Siddurim, Bible books, prayer books, and a lot of the prayers are sung, so everyone's involved in it, so it's a beautiful atmosphere. Everyone's invited.
Thank you. So, Rabbi, thank you for the time and the knowledge.
Thank you, and God willing, we will talk next week about another phenomenal parsha.
Yeah, God willing. Shabbat shalom.
Beautiful. All right, you too. Be well.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.